to say, we're just about out of time. Actually, oh, shoot, we got to say bye. Everyone say bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
I'm Tom Hoos from Earlton, New York, and I'm listening to WGXC ACRA, New York.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Pat Lanan of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Chatham Town Board last week approved the transfer of approximately 3 acres of town land to the New York State Police for the construction of a new barracks. The building will be located next to the Chatham Town Hall on Route 295. The board was asked by the state police in 2018 to donate the land so their new Lebanon barracks could be moved. At the Thursday, September 19th town meeting, State Police Captain Harold Lotardo said the new location is expected to be completed in 2022, and it will house 25 to 30 offices. The structure will be one-story, slab on grade, and approximately 5,000 square feet in size. Read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that last week, after opening a few weeks ago, all but two of the 25 rooms at the Galvin Civic Motel in Greenport are occupied. In March 2018, the Galvin Foundation bought the former Sunset Motel on Route 9 and has been remodeling and getting site plan approval since then to house local homeless individuals and families. The foundation is partnering with Columbia County Social Services to provide on-site social and mental health services. Commissioner Robert Gibson said, quote, "We're excited to provide more intensive services like this so we can help people get back on their feet more quickly," unquote. Rooms go for $85 per night. The Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene Counties provides two full-time case managers to residents there. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the Port Authority Board, September 26, approved a new plan to attract additional airline service and more passengers and to improve and expand on concession facilities at Stewart International Airport. The decision followed recent news of the loss of Norwegian Air's European service at the Orange County hub. Norwegian terminated service September 14th, because of the continued grounding of the Boeing 737 MAX jets worldwide. The new plan includes hiring a new operator. The authority intends to upgrade the air carrier's incentive program and to hire an experienced marketing firm to increase Stewart's visibility internationally and within the Hudson Valley. Construction of a 20,000-square-foot addition to the passenger terminal is underway. The addition was designed to handle federal inspection station services for international travelers. Read the full story
at MidHudsonNews.com.
Chris Bragg reports in the Albany Times-Union that a safety reminder to anyone using a tractor to mow a field one last time this fall. On September 28th, 86-year-old Bernard Jaskowski was riding a tractor, towing a brush hog and mowing at the Jaskowski farm in the town of Claverick. At one point, he got off and turned off the tractor, but it remained in gear. Getting back on, it started to move, and Jaskowski was run over by the rear tire. His 48-year-old son, Jay Jaskowski, standing next to the tractor, was also run over. They both ended up at Albany Medical Center, where they are in critical but stable condition. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union.
Rachel Silberstein is reporting for the Times-Union. Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy is drawing criticism for its latest student conduct policy. The private university, August 29th, published new requirements stating that students may distribute written materials on campus only if they are part of what the school defines as a recognized student organization. They must also receive express permission from a school administrator to circulate the information. Critics say the new guidelines are worded in a way that will quell dissent and impede free speech. School officials argue the limits are necessary to prevent solicitors like credit card companies from gaining campus access. RPI has been criticized for its crackdown on student protests. The Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, a Philadelphia-based nonprofit group that promotes civil liberties on college campuses, has included RPI on its list of 10 worst campuses for freedom of expression. In light of the newly released policy, the group is calling on the school in an open letter to, and I quote, abandon its continued efforts to suppress free speech, end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Governor Andrew Cuomo said September 28th that state police will increase patrols at synagogues and other religious centers in New York for the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur holidays. Rosh Hashanah began at sunset September 29th and ends Tuesday, October 1st, and marks the start of the Jewish New Year 5780. Yom Kippur begins in the evening on October 8th and ends the next evening. Quote, we will not allow the cowards who contributed to the recent rash of hateful acts against the Jewish community and other groups to intimidate or divide us, unquote, Cuomo said. The Southern Poverty Law Center hate map currently lists 47 hate groups in New York State, but only one in the Hudson Valley. That is a white nationalist group called the Right Stuff in Hopewell Junction in Dutchess County.
David Figura is reporting for NYUP.com. New York's bow hunting season for deer and bear kicks off September 27th in the northern zone and October 1st in the southern zone. In addition, the deadline to apply for deer management permits or doe tags is fast approaching, and hunters must submit their choice by October 1st. Hunters who still need to pick up their license and permits for the 2019-20 season can do so through any of the DEC's 1,300 outlets statewide by phone at 866-933-2257 or online through the Decals website. Read Figura's comprehensive hunting guide at nyup.com.
The village of Catskill was among the few local municipalities on the latest fiscal stress report from New York's comptroller Tom DiNapoli. On September 26th, his office released a list of towns, villages, and counties with fiscal stress designations, updated with financial information through the end of last year. The city of Poughkeepsie in Dutchess County was named under significant stress. The city of Albany and the village of Catskill were both considered susceptible to fiscal stress, according to the comptroller's office. The city of Watervliet and the town of Colony, both in Albany County, were also named as susceptible. See the link to the full report on the WGXC newsroom.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. We'll be right back.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a partly sunny Monday with a high of 64, a low around 54 Monday night with a 30% chance of rain after midnight. Tuesday should be partly sunny with a high near 76, and then again a 30% chance of showers after 8 p.m. on Tuesday night with a low around 62. Wednesday, there's a 40% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies, a high near 76 and a low around 50. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
I'm George Spencer, and once again, on Tuesday, Pauline DeCarmo and I will have our bi-monthly program on the afternoon show. At 4 p.m., we'll be visiting with Sandy Moore. Sandy's a painter, experimental filmmaker, writer, and MD, a doctor. We'll be talking with her about growing up in North Carolina, studying and teaching at Yale and Cooper Union. We'll also be discussing her interest in history and social justice and how these are reflected in her work. At 5 p.m., we'll be talking with Sienna Reed. She's a multimedia artist working in painting, drawing, video, photography, and ceramics, among other experimental processes. She is currently working on a large multimedia project that examines the media circus around the Amanda Knox trial in Italy and the etymology and semantics of the words that were used to describe her by the police, prosecution, lawyers, media, and ultimately the anonymous online internetters. So on Tuesday, please listen in from 4 to 6 p.m. We're very excited to have two such interesting guests. Tune in and hear what they have to say.
Listen out for these live broadcasts and extra web streams on the WGXE program schedule during the coming week. On Thursday, October 3rd, WGXC Live will carry a live web stream from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill of an evening curated by the Workers Unite Film Festival, featuring a tribute to local artist Bruce Anderson and performances from Brooklyn-based Color Collage, Catskill's Gary's Dream, and Palinville's Potted Plant, plus a screening of Final Cuts. The webcast begins at 7 p.m. at wgxc.org/listen and is also on 90.7 FM after 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. when it will continue as a webcast at wgxc.org/listen.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at wgxc.org, including some of these events.
On Monday, September 30th, City of Hudson Board of Estimate and Apportionment Budget Workshop, focusing on the Hudson Police Department, will be held at Hudson City Hall from 3 to 5 p.m. The architectural firm of Lacey Thaler presents their feasibility study of the potential adaptive reuse of the John L. Edwards Middle School building in the Hudson Area Library Community Room starting at 6 p.m. Bitchin' Bajas, M. Geddes Gangras, and Primitive Air perform at Tubby's in Kingston from 8 to 11 p.m. On Tuesday, October 1st, featured art shown is by Paul Emile Rioux and Laura Gaton at the Hudson Underground on Warren Street from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. A selection of wines and culinary samples are included. The Catskill Town Board meets on the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. with live web stream on WGXC.org. On Wednesday, October 2nd, award-winning writer Emily Sekar, founder of the Hudson Valley Memoir Collective, will be the guest speaker at a buffet luncheon sponsored by the Friends of the Hudson Area Library in the library's community room from 12 to 2 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
October 11th is the deadline to register for the November 5th town and county elections. This year, though, voting begins October 26th at a limited number of locations. Locally, Greene has one location in Catskill, while other voters registered in Columbia County have three locations to vote ahead of November 5th, the county office building in Hudson, the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Building in Valencia, and the Copeg Town Hall in Copeg. In southern Albany County, the Helderberg Ambulance site at 978 Coal Hill Road in East Bern will be set up for all voters registered in election districts in Bern, Knox, Rensselaerville, and Westerlo. The Bethlehem Lutheran Church at 85 Elm Avenue in Delmont will be for voters registered in Bethlehem, Coymans, and New Scotland. In southern Rensselaer County, the Skodak Town Hall at 265 Sherman Road in Castleton-on-the-Hudson will be set up for early voting. To gain a political advantage, Republicans in the majority in Rensselaer County did not set up an early voting site in Troy, the county's largest city and home of more Democrats than GOP members.
As far back as I could remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
The big issue here is abuse of presidential power. And when we look back at Nixon, that was the bottom line. We talk about the cover-up and the dirty tricks, but the major issue was abuse of presidential power. And that's what this one is all about.
That was Marcia Mitchell talking about the significance of the Ukraine call whistleblower complaint. A writer and former Secretary of Labor for South Dakota, she wrote the book The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War, now a movie, about a British intelligence translator named Catherine Gunn, who leaked information to the press in 2003 concerning alleged illegal activity by the U.S. leading up to the invasion of Iraq. Over the weekend, the White House confirmed that administration lawyers ordered the transcript of a phone call between President Donald Trump and Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky to be moved from the regular White House server to a more secretive server, usually used for information of a, quote, especially sensitive nature. There's a very specific process to making a whistleblower complaint. First, the whistleblower submits the complaint to the Inspector General, who assesses it and then passes it on to the Director of National Intelligence, currently Trump appointee Joseph McGuire, who then has 7 days to get it to congressional intelligence committees. McGuire, though, did not pass on the complaint to Congress within the time frame.
The whistleblower can go to jail. The whistleblower can be in great trouble and has no protection under the law. If, in fact, the DNI decides that the complaint really isn't legitimate, however, the whistleblower, who's obviously an expert in the intelligence community, has, in fact, researched the law on the definition of urgency and determined that it was indeed urgent.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, the subject of the investigation President Trump requested from the Ukrainian president, called on the White House to cooperate with investigations by the various congressional committees.
And it's time for the Congress to fully investigate the conduct of this president. The president should stop stonewalling this investigation and all the other investigations into his alleged wrongdoing.
Mitchell says her concern is protecting legitimate whistleblowers and our country's ability to maintain effective oversight.
Congress has oversight of the whole intelligence community. But in this case, when the sight is blinded by political machinations, there is no oversight. There can't be, you know, and that's so important to this country.
The Senate is majority Republican, so senators from the president's own party would have to vote for impeachment for it to happen. Former Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake said on MSNBC recently that he thinks 35 Republican senators would vote to impeach if they could vote in private. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Wolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're here with Brandon Costello-Kuhn, who is an anthropologist of media, science, and the environment. A nice combination. What this project is that you're working on at the moment, which has a lot to do with climate change. It's a series of studies taking place in RPI.
Yep, they're mostly up at RPI. We're also working with some collaborators from Science for the People and other local groups to develop parallel events that are really focused on the benefit of the broader community. But all of the speakers will be giving a talk on a Wednesday at RPI from 12:30 to 2. And while that's technically accessible to the public, we realize that that timing's not good for a lot of people that are maybe working 9 to 5, and so that's part of the reason that we're doing these other workshops, which will often be Tuesday evenings.
Okay.
So we're in the middle of planning those, but everything's open to the public. We just had our first speaker this past Wednesday.
Yes.
And we
The next one's the 16th?
Yeah, coming up on October 16th.
And it's really interesting. Why not change the climate?
Yeah, that's actually the next one on October 30th.
Oh, it is. Okay.
James DeLoisio is a graduate of RPI.
Okay.
He does structural engineering and is giving a talk called Quantifying Engineering Solutions to Anthropogenic Climate Change.
Now, that's interesting because I don't have a clue what you mean by anthropogenic climate change.
Sure,
so
you
have to tell me that.
Yeah, so anthropogenic means that humans are a primary force driving climate change.
Right.
So the target seems to kind of keep moving. First, climate denialists will say the climate isn't changing at all. Then it's, okay, I guess it is changing, but humans aren't really the cause of it. It's these natural cycles. And then most recently, I've been hearing from agencies under the Trump administration, yes, it's happening. Yes, humans are causing it, but we can't really do anything about it anyway. And it's all China's problem. And so the rollback of the vehicle emission standards that passed under Obama, kind of buried deep in that document, says it doesn't really make any difference if we roll back these fuel efficiency standards because it's such a tiny dent in the problem, and it'll hurt the economy.
That's coming out of the federal mouthpiece.
Yeah.
But the point being that he's rolled back even that option of 4%.
Right.
Is it 4%? Yes.
Yeah,
so
I mean, the
Trump
scenarios,
has rolled that back.
You know, these scenarios have been coming out from the IPCC for a while now. Which is a big collaboration of a lot of differently trained scientists that are all working together through the UN.
Is this unique that there's so many scientists that are now gathering together and working on this problem together? Or
I mean, there have
has it always been happening, or is this kind of a new push because of
the climate
crisis?
There have been large kind of collaborative scientific projects with a lot of funding that, like the Human Genome Project is one example that comes to mind. The climate change issue is, I don't know if it's unique, but it certainly is one that brings together scientists from many different disciplines because it just impacts so many parts of life. Because it's a lot of the work is kind of future oriented, and this is what the third speaker in the series studies climate models. So Paul Edwards has this talk coming up called Why Not Change the Climate? What Models and Data Tell Us About Planetary Futures. And so he'll be talking about how scientists actually get together and come up with these different scenarios, Right. So that, and what keeps happening is the so-called worst case scenario keeps moving and getting worse and worse, because
getting closer, you mean?
We keep saying, oh, actually it's going faster than we thought. Oh,
yes.
Actually the worst case is actually much worse than what we thought, right? I was talking with a climate scientist not long ago who said, you know, I've been to all these conferences, and nobody ever says, oh, actually, it's not going quite as fast as we thought, all right? That doesn't really typically happen, because scientists tend to be a pretty careful, conservative bunch when it comes to how they communicate. So pretty much every scientist agrees that it's at least this intense, right?
Is.
So when you see reports coming out from the IPCC, it's been through so many vetted processes, and there have been all these compromises that a lot of scientists, if they're just talking to you less formally, they're going to say, like, well, actually, it's probably a lot worse than that, right? So this most recent report from October that's been getting a lot of attention, you know, says we have 11, 12 years to make
yes.
massive changes. When I hear that, I think, well, it needs to happen now.
Right. Well, interestingly, I mean, this is talking about how to plan for the future.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
of these particular workshops
yeah.
that you're open to the public that are
mm-hmm.
brilliant. I mean, I've got to say that the titles are baffling, but we should overlook that and just come and enjoy them. But
yeah.
is there stuff you can do? I mean, is this going to help us attack this problem today, or is this planning for education in the future, for developing new scientists who will start to benefit with
mm-hmm.
what's the whole workshops? Because you're going to do another one in the spring, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll continue for the full year. Well, so the title of the series is Engineering the Anthropocene. And the Anthropocene is a proposed new epoch. So we've been in the Holocene. And the Holocene has been sweet for us humans. It's kind of it's a really nice climate conditions when it comes to agriculture. And we have storms, but we're entering a phase where storms will be much more intense, more frequent, right? So there's been this proposal to call this new epoch the Anthropocene, which is named, just like we were talking about with anthropogenic, it's like humans are kind of the fundamental world-shaping force, right? And the term has been...
I think I wrote that down somewhere.
Yeah. the term has been critiqued in many different ways, and it's really sparked a really lively discussion. I don't know if it's the best way to be talking about it, but it's a way that many people are talking about the world and starting to recognize just how big the effects are that humans have been having on the atmosphere, on the oceans, on biodiversity loss, right, this mass extinction we're in the middle of.
Is this all going to be discussed in these workshops?
I think all those things are. Yeah, we have about 16 or 17
oh,
different
wow.
people this year.
Well, one thing you said, which I thought was really interesting, is mm-hmm. like everyone feels like, well, what can I do?
Yeah.
What can I do? I'm only one person,
yeah.
you know, so I won't use plastic straws, or
yeah.
I won't do this, or I won't do that.
Yeah.
And I think we all feel it's more monumental than
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I thought was wonderful here mm-hmm. is engage with ideas,
mm-hmm.
find out what's going on, be knowledgeable yourself,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you can make more important decisions
yeah.
that are based on what you believe.
Absolutely.
As an individual, rather than pushing whatever the government tells you or whatever some
mm-hmm.
industry tells you. Because it's pretty frightening. It's,
yeah.
it's pretty frightening. I mean,
it is.
Poor little Greta,
yeah.
did you say? Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I mean, this idea of this question, what can I do? I think it's really important to, even before asking that question, say, well, who am I and where am I, right? Because the answer to what can I do about something monumental like climate change, I think, should be kind of at the intersection of, well, what are my skills? Who am I in contact with? Who do I want to be working with? What kind of training do I have? Like, so... there's no one answer for that question, of course, but it's always going to be situated in place and in time and in identity and in desire and all these different things. So hopefully one thing the series does is give kind of like a sampler platter of many different examples of what people are doing. Right, so it's not a matter of having a career that is connected to climate change, and the default is for it to not be connected. It's a matter of what is the nature of that relationship or that connection.
What's up, y'all? This is Sean Ardoin on WGXC Radio, hands-on radio, all the way from Louisiana. I'm coming to you in your ear grease, baby. Lock it in.
Here is a preview of the feature shows coming up on WGXC on Tuesday, October 1st, 2019. Start your day with the WGXC Morning Show, hosted by Tom Rowe. In the second hour, singer Nell Flannery and drummer Danny Shear will talk about the debut performance of their new band, It's Just Pythons. Then at 3 p.m., Framework, the field recording, phonography, and art of sound hunting, presented by Patrick Tubin McGinley, featuring Massimo Tuniti and many others. And then at 6:30 p.m., Representative Antonio Delgado holds a town hall meeting at the Dutchess County Town Hall. WGXC will attempt to broadcast a congressperson's Facebook live feed on 90.7 FM. To view the full programming schedule, make a one-time donation, or become a sustaining donor, visit our website, wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Blanche Mackey of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Let's talk about impeachable offenses. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has launched an impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump.
And this week, the president has admitted to asking the president of Ukraine to take actions which would benefit him politically. The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. I'm directing our six committees to proceed with their investigations under that umbrella of impeachment inquiry. The president must be held accountable. No one is above the law.
Speaker Pelosi has been pressured for months on impeachment from congressional and grassroots progressives. An intelligence community whistleblower raised concerns over a phone call last July that Trump held with Ukraine's new president, Volodymyr Zelensky, pushing more moderate Democrats to support an impeachment inquiry. Trump admitted he asked Ukraine to investigate his political rival, that's former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden, and ordered withholding of Ukrainian aid. Such behavior may rise to the high crimes and misdemeanor standard for impeachment, but isn't Trump already deserving of an impeachment inquiry many times over? On May 17, 2017, less than 4 months into Trump's presidency, Democratic Congressmember Al Green of Houston was the first to take to the House floor calling for Trump's impeachment. Within days, Green, who's African-American, was receiving death threats. One voicemail threatened, "You ain't gonna impeach nobody, you bleep. Try it and we'll lynch all you bleep. You'll be hanging from a tree." On Wednesday, the day after House Speaker Pelosi announced the impeachment inquiry, Congressmember Green, appearing on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, agreed that the Ukrainian issue is an impeachable offense.
I would also mention the emoluments clause, and articles have been filed with reference to the president benefiting from persons who are staying in his hotels, and that's much to be said about that. I would also never forget the racism, the bigotry, the xenophobia, the homophobia, the Islamophobia, the fact that the president has infused his bigotry into policy.
The case for an emoluments impeachment is ever-growing, it seems. Foreign delegations and lobbyists regularly stay at Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C., and spend lavishly there. Ukrainian President Zelensky, according to the declassified transcript released by the White House Wednesday, let Trump know that he stayed at Trump Tower in New York Central Park. Trump has been accused of rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment by at least 24 women. These accusations alone certainly provide cause for an impeachment inquiry. Trump has retaliated against many of these women, threatening to sue them or crassly insulting them as not his type. Trump himself has admitted on the notorious Access Hollywood tape that he forces himself on women.
Start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
The policy agenda that Donald Trump is pursuing based on climate science denial amounts to an impeachable offense. He's accelerating environmental destruction, leading to irreversible, catastrophic climate change. The Trump administration pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement and tirelessly rolls back environmental regulations while boosting the extraction and sale of fossil fuels.
We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
That's 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg ferociously reprimanding the adults gathered at the United Nations Climate Action Summit Monday. Showing up at the summit for just 14 minutes, Trump mocked Thunberg on Twitter, saying she looked like, quote, a very happy young girl looking forward to a bright and wonderful future, unquote. The authority to wage war, to direct the U.S. military to kill people, is the presidential power that demands the most intense oversight by Congress and by the public. Trump ran for president promising to withdraw from foreign wars, but has delivered the opposite. Recently in Afghanistan, the U.S. launched a drone strike that killed 30 civilians, pine nut farmers resting in the shade, and participated in a nighttime raid that killed an estimated 40 civilians, prolonging the longest war in U.S. history. Trump continues to support Saudi Arabia's devastating bombing of Yemen that has killed thousands of civilians. A recent Saudi bombing of a community college killed at least 109 people there. Millions of Yemenis are at risk of starvation in what's described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Congress has twice passed bipartisan legislation to block arms sales to the Saudis, which Trump has vetoed. He's also ordered more troops to Saudi Arabia to protect its oil facilities and lavishes praise on Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. October 2nd marks the first anniversary of the brutal murder and dismemberment of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi in a Saudi consulate in Turkey, which the CIA concluded was ordered by bin Salman. Trump's warmongering is an impeachable offense in itself. President Trump's refusal to support gun control legislation, mass shooting after mass shooting, his prolific lying, his relentless attacks on the press, his elimination of critical programs in our social safety net, his discrimination against trans people in the military and in schools, his Muslim ban, his separation of families and caging of children, all are worthy of an impeachment inquiry. As Congressmember Al Green says,
we have to at some point stand up to him and let him know that the line has been drawn and you will go no further.
I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Diane Vowden is reporting for the Columbia paper. The town of Ankrum officials bid farewell to longtime appointed assessor Ken Leggett September 19th. He served in the position for 12 years. Leggett, a Livingston resident, started working on that town's highway crew in September 1974. He went on to become the elected assessor there in 1980. He leaves his assessor position in both Ankrum and Livingston as of September 30th. The Ankrum Town Board voted unanimously to appoint longtime Gallatin assessor Rene DeLieu to fill the town's assessor post for a six-year term beginning October 1st. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Dan Friedman is reporting for the Times Union. Small family farms, especially those in upstate New York, are still idealized as the backbone of America, but price fluctuations, oversupply, more frequent hurricanes, and constant squeezing by middlemen and grocery chains have made it difficult for many farmers to make a living, particularly in the fresh fruit and vegetable sector. In New York alone, the number of farms declined by 6% between 2012 and 2017, and nearly 11,000 acres of vegetable were taken out of production. Chris Poleski of Poleski Farms outside of Goshen told a reporter, and I quote, "I don't even encourage my own children to go into farming anymore. It eats me up inside. But how do I, in good conscience, tell them that farming is good when I'm $250,000 in debt and I'm at the mercy of the market situation and the weather?" End quote. Last week, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand sent a letter to the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture calling for a review of the pricing structure of the fresh fruit and vegetable industry. Gillibrand wrote, it, and I quote, "poses a risk to our food security as we rely more on the production of foreign nations, leading to our current $2.1 billion fruit and vegetable trade deficit," end quote. Data gathered by Gillibrand's staff shows that over the last 20 years, wholesale prices for broccoli, green beans, cabbage, and apples have gone up more rapidly than what farmers receive for that same produce. Tom Stenzel, president and CEO of the United Fresh Produce Association, wrote in a statement, and I quote, "The fresh produce industry operates on extremely tight margins. Our industry is the ultimate supply and demand economy, and our real goal must be to increase demand for fresh fruit and vegetables. That's the key to raising prices paid to farmers," end quote. Gillibrand said she planned to introduce legislation that provides for real-time pricing to farmers, and I quote, "so they're no longer left in the dark," end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union. Amelia Teasdale is reporting in the Columbia paper. The Chatham Village Planning Board met September 23rd to review and approve plans for a new single-screen movie theater at 4 Depot Square. The building to be constructed will face the train station that houses a branch of Community Bank and next to the Harrington's Building Supply Store. The theater will be built by Jack Shear and run by the Crandall Theater, a nonprofit organization. The new theater is intended to supplement the Crandall's existing offering and part of a plan to complete the renovation of the historic larger theater at 48 Main Street. The Depot Square building will have about 11 rows of seats as well as a lobby. The planning board waived the parking requirements for the project and voted unanimously to approve the site plan. All four board members were present. Aaron Gaylord, who represented Shear at the meeting and is responsible for the construction, said they hope to have the project completed within a year. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Students from Cornell University are coming to Catskill to assess the area and provide information that will be used for the town's new comprehensive plan. Approximately a dozen graduate and undergraduate students from Cornell's City and Regional Planning Department will collect data on October 5th and 6th. The information will eventually be compiled into a report and delivered to the town in December. The project is being undertaken in conjunction with the Hudson River Estuary Program. Catskill Town Supervisor Doreen Davis said, and I quote, "It's an extraordinary opportunity to have this level of expertise and not have to budget for it," end quote. The town board made an informal commitment to review the comprehensive plan in February and applied for a State Department of Environmental Conservation Community Smart Growth Grant in June to help with the process. Davis said the idea behind taking inventory of scenic resources is to balance conservation and economic growth. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXE.org. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now here is your WGXE Hands-On Radio weather update. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a partly sunny Monday afternoon with a temperature high near 67 degrees and a light and variable wind at around 6 miles an hour. There will be a slight chance of showers tonight. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 55 degrees and a south wind at 6 to 9 miles an hour. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 77 degrees. Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 64. And on Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny with a high near 72 degrees. Wednesday night, showers are likely mainly before 2 a.m. It will be partly cloudy with a low of around 48. So there you have your weather update brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties. Here is a programming preview of some of the feature programs coming up on WGXC 90.7 FM on Monday, September 30th, 2019. At 11 a.m., there's Morning Sampler, hosted by Brendan Donegan. Brendan will feature music from Lee Morgan, Emmylou Harris, and many more. After the local news at noon, Deep Trees, a weekly radio show that brings you eclectic instrumental soundscapes that fuse jazz, electronica, soundtracks, modern classical, and experimental music. And then at 2 p.m., Vital Weekly, an email magazine which appears 48 times a year and brings you excerpts from the best new experimental music in the world. To view the full WGXE programming schedule, make a one-time donation, or become a sustaining donor, visit our website, WGXC.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Gunel Reznikoff of Chatham, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is WGXC's Congressional Report, tracking the votes, words, and actions of Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, representing the 19th Congressional District, Paul Tonko, a Democrat from Amsterdam, the 20th Congressional District. 538.com website reports that, so far, first-term Congressperson Delgado votes with Donald Trump's positions 4.3% of the time. Since Democrats took over the House of Representatives, Tonko also votes with Trump's positions 2.1% of the time. In the previous congressional session, Tonko voted with Trump 22.6% of the time. Jeffrey Wilson reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that the Hudson Valley Democrats in Congress are now united in support of an impeachment inquiry of the president. Representative Sean Patrick Maloney, who represents the 18th District in the Southern Hudson Valley, and Representative Antonio Delgado both announced September 24th that they were joining Representative Paul Tonko and almost 200 other Democrats supporting impeachment. Maloney said he is, quote, prepared to pursue an impeachment inquiry. I have had a high bar for putting the country through an impeachment inquiry, especially so close to an election, but these allegations go to the heart of the oath I took. There comes a time to put your country first, unquote. Delgado and Maloney committed publicly to impeachment just hours before House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also called for an official impeachment inquiry. New York Democrat Representative Joe Morrell, who represents Rochester, also joined the list of those backing impeachment, which grew to over 200 by the end of the day. The U.S. Senate voted unanimously September 24th for a non-binding resolution calling for the whistleblower complaint related to President Trump's communications with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to be released to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. Trump admits to asking about Ukraine investigating the son of Democrat Joe Biden and was reportedly threatening to withhold Senate-approved funding for the country. House Democrats are expected to vote to condemn the president's actions with Ukraine in the September 25th vote. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
On Twitter, Delgado wrote, and I quote, "The first responsibility of the President of the United States is to keep our country safe, but it has become clear that our president has placed his personal interest above the national security of our nation. I believe articles of impeachment are warranted," end quote. National Republican Congressional Committee spokesperson Michael McAdams responded to Delgado's announcement saying, and I quote, "In a district President Trump won by more than 6 points, Antonio Delgado's decision to pursue impeachment will be a political death sentence," end quote.
On September 25th, both Tonko and Delgado voted for the Safe Banking Act, which passed 321-103. This bill aims to make it easier for banks to do business with the cannabis industry. On September 27th, both Delgado and Tonko voted with all Democrats, 11 Republicans, and one independent to end the national emergency declared by the president on February 15th about the immigration issue. Paul Tonko does not list any public events this week on his website nor on any other week. Antonio Delgado lists two future events on his website this week. At 6:30 p.m. October 1st, Delgado holds a town hall meeting at the Dutchess County Town Hall, 1215 Center Road in Rhinebeck. And he's also bringing FCC Commissioner Jeffrey Starks for a congressional field hearing on rural broadband at 1 p.m. October 4th in the Columbia Green Community College Arts Center. This has been the WGXC Congressional Report. Go to the website wgxc.org and click on the WGXC Newsroom to find out more about all these stories.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're with Johanna Fowler of Mothers Out Front of Dutchess County. And welcome to the show, Johanna.
Thanks so much for having me, Alexis.
So let's get right to it. What is this event that you're having, Earth to Cuomo?
We're having a mass rally in Poughkeepsie on Sunday, October 13th of Columbus Day weekend. It's called Earth to Cuomo, the Rally for New York's Climate. And it's our intention to send a strong, unified message to our governor, Governor Andrew Cuomo, that New Yorkers from all over the state are very concerned about the direction that New York is heading while the earth is getting hotter and hotter. We have a new law that was passed and signed by Governor Cuomo in June called the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, or the CLCPA for short. And that ambitious law has set targets that define deadlines by which emissions of carbon dioxide from the power sector must be reduced by 100% in 20 years. And we know that what is happening in New York in reality is that new natural gas facilities are being proposed, and that the ones that may start in January have a 40, 50, and 60-year life cycle that take us well beyond the deadline of 2040. So we have concerns about how we're going to get to the law's legally defined mandates to reduce carbon emissions to zero by 2040 from the power sector while we have what's really going on in the state happening.
Is there a challenge to the law? I mean, why is natural gas infrastructure being built in spite of it?
Well, because it's the currently easy way out. We know that the fossil fuel industry is one of the biggest lobbyists in America. And, you know, this is where we're at right now. And we have safe alternatives. We have wind and solar and geothermal, but they're not being actively pursued the way they should be. You know, way back during the Obama administration, when he was setting energy guidelines, the clean energy renewables were not at the point that they are today, much vastly improved. What we need is more money to put behind clean energy renewables, more money for investments and research, instead of the billions of dollars that we're spending on constructing fossil fuel infrastructure. So that's really one of the issues, that despite the fact that know our Earth has a fever and it's getting hotter every year, and that power plants emit greenhouse gases that accelerate global warming, our leaders are not running in this race against time. They are walking, and we need to ask them to do much more quickly.
So stop the fossil fuel infrastructure from being built. That seems pretty obvious. But how to get there is a much more challenging question. So let me think of how to phrase this question. What are the goals of the rally? I mean, what is your message to Cuomo, and why did you invite him?
Well, we invited Governor Cuomo as the only elected official to speak because he has the trigger. He has his finger on the trigger of everything that happens in New York. He is our elected leader. And in April, we presented a petition to him and to the Department of Environmental Conservation and other New York state leaders asking him to use his authority and his influence to expedite move away from fossil fuel dependency toward clean energy renewables, and to specifically we asked him to do another study of a huge power plant that's under construction here in Dutchess County on the Connecticut-New York border. He didn't answer our request, and we asked for a new study because this power plant in particular was authorized in 2012, which is light years ago in the world of science, in terms of the way we measure the impact of greenhouse gases, in terms of the research that has come out since 2011 about the impact on health and on the environment from greenhouse gases and chemical pollutants.
Are there specific development projects that you're targeting? Can you name them?
Oh, yes. Start with Cricket Valley here in Dutchess County. This plant is under construction. It started in 2017, even though it was approved in 2012, and it's scheduled to go online in January. And this plant by itself will contribute almost 4 million metric tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. If you take into account the methane that leaks from the pipelines, the natural infrastructure, the compressor plants, from the moment that it's fracked from the ground, it will generate from 6 to 16 million metric tons every year for the next 40 to 50 years. Then there's the Danskammer plant on the Hudson River in Newburgh, which is under proposal, a 680-megawatt power plant facility. And that's a site that was flooded during Storm Sandy. Doesn't make sense. The Competitive Power Ventures Energy Plant started up in January. Again, it has a 40, 50, 60-year life cycle, and it's going to be putting out pollutants and greenhouse gases every year for the next 40 or 50 or 60 years of its natural life cycle. These take us in the wrong direction because our new law, the CLCPA that Governor Cuomo signed, said that we must be reducing carbon emissions, and yet these proposed and actual power plants are going to be adding carbon emissions to the power grid.
So we got 3 minutes.
Yep.
Have you received a response from Cuomo?
No, we have not. And we haven't received a response with regard to our petition for Cricket Valley asking for a new